You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we talk with a Madison-based children's author about her books featuring diverse characters out enjoying nature, some activities she didn't get to experience as a child herself. Now, starting Monday, 1A is moving a bit here on the Ideas Network. The national talk show is live from 9 to 11 in the morning. That's when it will air here in Wisconsin. 1A is a talk program that covers politics, technology, culture, sports, and more. It takes calls and comments from people who follow the program. Jen White became 1A's host last month in July. She started in public radio in Michigan and was most recently a host in Chicago. Here she is with WPR host Keely Boltina.
1A tackles questions facing our country every day, but we just have so many of them. News happens so quickly. How do you figure out what's most important on any given day?
Well, fortunately, I don't work alone. We have a great production team, and we have editorial meetings every single day to try to suss out exactly that question. And sometimes it's really about the conversation that's happening in the moment, the question people are having over their dinner tables. And sometimes it's about the conversation that's going to be happening in 2 or 3 days, the one we're trying to get ahead of. So it really depends on that team discussion and us coming together and saying, okay, this is the public conversation that's happening right now. Let's see if we can move it a step or two forward.
How do you know what that public conversation looks like?
Well, I think part of it is just the way we're talking about it as a team. We have a really diverse team, which is wonderful. And so, you know, we bring a lot of our personal experiences to the table to say, hey, I'm hearing this conversation over here. Well, this is an angle that I'm hearing over here. And we kind of put it all together and figure out how we want to shape the conversation so that it's an inclusive conversation. So when people are listening, they feel like it's the conversation they're having with their friends and family every day.
Well, part of that conversation is the listener. I mean, 1A invites people to call in, to tweet. What do you think people in Wisconsin can offer these conversations that are inherently based for a national audience?
Oh, gosh. I'm a Midwesterner. I grew up in Detroit. And the thing that has always been a challenge to me is the fact that so much of the news is based on the East or West Coast. And one of the things that was exciting to me about taking on this role was bringing a Midwesterner's experience to the show. And so what I'm really hoping to hear from Wisconsin listeners is that perspective. You know, what is life like when you're not on one of the coasts? How are you thinking about politics in your community? How are you thinking about investment and what it means to invest in a community? That's a perspective that's too often missing in these national conversations. And so I'm excited to have Wisconsin added to our lineup.
And you think that when we call in, when we tweet, that our perspective is taken seriously?
It's taken seriously by 1A. Here's the thing that's really interesting about this show. We get such a range of feedback from people who are tuning in, and we hear from people all over the country. And what I appreciate about that is how it enriches the conversation. It makes it really difficult to talk about these issues, the many issues we're facing as a nation, in a binary, as it's either, you know, X or Y, because you have this mix of experiences in the conversation as people are tweeting us or sending us email messages. And it's just built into the conversation as it's happening in real time. I don't think 1A would be as strong of a show if we didn't have that element. So we take listener feedback very seriously. We ask you to call into the show, to tweet us, so that we can build your perspective into the show as it's happening.
Jen White is host of 1A. Starting Monday, the national live call-in talk show airs from 9 to 11 in the morning here on the Ideas Network. And Jen, 1A stands for First Amendment, and the rights the First Amendment lays out come up often on the show, even on your first day hosting. Here are some of the questions you posed about freedom of speech.
But who defines what is hate speech? When do these restrictions run contrary to our constitutional right to freedom of speech? Does the First Amendment also guarantee freedom of reach, to have our voice amplified by technology and algorithms? Do some social media platforms not only allow hate speech, but incentivize it?
When I heard you say that, I wondered, does all speech have a place in the conversations on 1A? How do you handle that?
So that's a really interesting question. So to be clear, I am not curating the comments that are coming in because I'm hosting a show. But our producers do a really good job of going through the comments and trying to capture opinions that aren't being represented on the show. Now, we do not allow hate speech on 1A. That's not something that we allow on the show. So you're not going to hear slurs or people using offensive language. But if it's a different perspective, if it's a perspective that challenges the perspective of our guest or guests, we do include that because it again makes a conversation richer when someone who's, you know, calling in or writing in from Wisconsin can say to a guest, "Hey, I heard you say this, but I disagree for these reasons." And then the guest has a chance to respond to that. And that's a conversation then that can happen in a way that's more difficult if we don't have differing perspectives on the show. So, you know, like any public radio show that I've appreciated, we do try to keep the conversation civil. It doesn't mean that it's not contentious, but we do believe in civility.
Yeah, there's a big difference between fighting and just discussing ideas that are not the same.
Mm-hmm.
When NPR announced that you were coming on to the show this summer, the press release says you'll champion Americans' right to speak freely. What does that mean?
Again, you know, I think it's about trying to present a diversity of thought and idea on the show. Now, we're not going to question science or try to give equal time to a conspiracy theory. But I do think there's a conversation to be had around why sometimes certain ideas that seem outlandish take hold. That's a conversation worth having. And we have to acknowledge that there are times and places where that is happening in this country. And we have to have the discussion about, A, why it's incorrect, but why it's appealing. So if the appeal of that idea is in some bias or ism, let's go on and talk about it. And let's talk about it clearly and let's talk about it honestly. And then let's move back to the facts. But again, having people say these things out loud and being able to confront them and being able to talk about them and being able to actually present factual information, I think it's really important. It's always important, but it's really important right now.
You are a radio host, a podcast host, a moderator, a public speaker. You've interviewed people like President Barack Obama, Oprah Winfrey. You're a skilled journalist. You're a woman. You're Black. What do you want people to realize about your experience when they hear you hosting 1A?
I want them to realize that I contain multitudes. Just like so many other people who are hosting radio shows, we're complex. I'm a complex person. I'm all of the things you listed. I'm also a science fiction fantasy nerd. I'm also a person who cares deeply about my family. I'm also a person who loves dogs and has, you know, two fur balls at home right now. And I'm a person who values empathy. And I think a lot of how I approach this work and trying to approach it with empathy comes from my experience of being a woman in this business, of being a Black woman in this business, of being the child of parents who were born under Jim Crow, you know, growing up with parents who I know didn't have a place where they could freely express their opinions and didn't always feel free to speak up because there were consequences. I bring all of that to this work. I hope that's what people can understand about me.
What have you already learned in hosting this show?
I've already learned that while there is great diversity of thought, I do believe people are looking for a place where they feel heard and where they can engage in a good faith conversation, even if that conversation doesn't lead to agreement. I wasn't sure that was the case when I took this job, but the engagement I've seen from listeners so far has actually been somewhat encouraging, in that it really has felt up until this point like people want to have the conversation. They at least want to have the conversation. And I think if you spend any amount of time on social media, you come away from it with a very different perspective. But I've been greatly encouraged by the way people who listen to this show engage with us.
We're excited to hear more. Jen, thank you for your time.
Keely, my pleasure.
That was 1A's Jen White talking to WPR host Keely Baltina. We're making a switch on Monday. From then on, you'll hear 1A live from 9 to 11 in the morning here on the Ideas Network. For a list of all our recent program changes and upcoming changes here at WPR, visit our website, wpr.org/fall2020. Coming up, we talked to a Madison resident who wasn't satisfied with the books about hiking and nature she was finding for her own child, so she wrote her own diverse children's books. That's coming up next here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, it's the week in Washington. We'll look at the last two nights of the Republican National Convention. For as many people have been seeking refuge in the outdoors lately, hitting the trails, going camping, and enjoying Wisconsin's green spaces, our next guest wants to make nature a place that everyone can feel they have a space in, and she has focused her energy on giving kids the joy of nature through her books. Dineo Dowd is a full-time mom and writer who was born in South Africa and now lives in Madison. She's the author of four children's books about hiking and has a blog called Wisconsin Adventure Family. That's at wiadventurefamily.com. Dineo, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here today.
I understand, Dineo, that when you were a kid, you wanted to hike. You wanted to get out in nature. You didn't have that opportunity. Can you talk about that a little?
Yes. So growing up in South Africa, I also aligned myself to the belief that there were things in life that were inherently just for white people, like camping, hiking, any water sport, you know. But then not until I became a mom myself, and then I saw a gap, because my daughter, when she was born, both her parents were already outside doing all these amazing things. Then that's when I realized that there aren't any diversity books available to read for kids. And that's when I started like looking into writing books that are going to feature all children of color and from different backgrounds.
And when you got out hiking here in the United States yourself, you noticed it wasn't just books. There weren't a lot of people who looked like you out on the trails, it sounds like.
Yeah, it was very challenging for me, because I had to look different way. Like I had to, you know, dress nice, put makeup on, a lipstick, just to convince people that I'm not here to rob anyone. I'm just out here enjoying nature. It was really hard, because you look around, I was in Utah, I couldn't see any black people out there hiking.
What is it that, given that you didn't have the opportunity to hike growing up, what is it that captured your imagination and gave you this desire to be out in nature?
I think it's just the passion and just follow going with what you believe and, you know, following the little thing like a dream. You know, like I've always wanted to be outside. I've always been curious looking at people hiking and camping. And my parents keep telling me that, oh, we don't do that. We don't do that. And finally, when I moved here 8 years ago, here I was just living by myself on the, you know, in the mountains, just like exploring and everything. So I couldn't hold myself back, even though it was challenging. I just went with the flow.
And you became a mom, and you, I understand, were worried, you know, well, I can't hike with other people. Nobody's going to want a crying baby with them. What did you find that allowed you to keep getting out of nature with your then newborn?
Yes, it was very challenging as soon as I became a mom, because no one wanted to hike with me. It was very lonely because all my family is back in South Africa. But then I found a group called Hike It Baby where they take families outside into nature. And, it came at the right time. My baby was only 4 months old. I learned how to carry a baby and go for long hikes like 6 miles in Utah. The elevation is very high there. So Hike It Baby was the only group that kind of motivated me and helped me throughout the motherhood. I mean, facing all these challenges and being lonely and transitioning, Hike It Baby was there for me.
We're talking to Dinio Dowd, author and Madison resident. She's written children's books featuring a diverse array of kids getting out in nature and getting out and hiking. Well, take us into your books, Dinio. What do we see?
So, when it comes to my book, diversity is very important. Representation matters in books. Kids want to read the books that motivates them and inspire them to do amazing things. I mean, you look back when we used to read all these Disney books, like we read the Disney books and then we want to go to Disney. So that's the thing with my books, like the Sunset Hike, after you read it, the kids want to get outside and go find the snakes, even if you are scared of snakes. But then going on a sunset hike with the family it seems like a family exercise. They really motivate kids to get outside and explore nature.
Why is it important to see kids who look different in children's books about hiking or anything we want kids to grow up and do?
It's a representation matters, like I have said. Just think of how when you were a teenager and they keep telling you that you have to read certain books, like you have to be careful what you read. We worry about whatever you read, it might change how you do things or how you look. So the same thing, if the kids read books that have diversity, they learn a lot from diversity, but also inspire them to get outside. Kids need to be outside and spend more time outside into nature than sit in the house, with devices on their couch and doing. We need to trade screen time with the green time.
Well, you grew up in South Africa, and as you said, you didn't have access to nature there for a variety of reasons. Here in the U.S., there are kids in maybe urban areas who don't have that nature right outside their door. Do you think we need to do to make sure everybody has at least some kind of access to get out and hike?
Yes, and I always say that when I hear the words hike, people think of the trails and going to the national parks. You can hike in the local parks. Like just get outside and you can walk to the, it doesn't have to be on the actual trail. Take a walk in the neighborhood. That count as a hike.
I know you're a big fan, now that you're in Wisconsin, of finding, off the beaten path places to enjoy nature, not just, the famous ones like Devil's Lake. What have been some of your
Yes.
favorite discoveries?
So I know everyone's favorite is Devil's Lake, but I love exploring local parks. I have actually written like a blog where I mentioned 10 of the best hike for the toddlers, like the little age, to get outside and explore less than 1.5 miles. They are all around Madison and you can find them on my blog. I believe in exploring the local parks and learning more and connecting with like all the community. And just like there's so many things that you can find behind your backyard. You just have to get outside and find these things.
Well, I'm in that boat, during the pandemic. I've definitely discovered some smaller city and county parks in the area. Has it gotten even more important to you lately to make sure people get outside when there's a lot of stuff that we just can't do lately?
Yes, it's been very hard these days with the pandemic and everything. I mean, we miss our friends. I mean, I was used to hiking with a group of people from Hike It Baby, and all of a sudden I couldn't hike with them. I couldn't be close to them. So it was very challenging for my family, but I am very grateful with Madison. Madison have lots of access to the nature. Like we have so many trails that people don't even know about. And, Patrick Mash is like right behind my back door. I had no idea that there was a trail right there until one day I decided, like, let me just go and take a walk. So we are lucky to live in Madison where we are surrounded by all these local parks, and you really don't have to drive to Devil's Lake to find hiking trails.
As a mom, I know you want your kid to get into hiking. Did she embrace it right away, or did it take a little work?
She embraced it right away. Like I said, that we have been hiking with my daughter since she was born. So that's the same thing with the pandemic, that she misses her friends. She misses the community. She misses our tribe, which is Hike It Baby. But then now we just hike with just the family. But she loves the outdoors, and she every day she just want to get outside. It's summertime right now. We play outside and catch fireflies in the afternoon. So hiking is very important in general for the kids. Kids need to step outside. They need to you, We need to allow them to get outside every day.
Can you give a little pep talk to parents who think, yeah, it's a good idea, but it's hard to work it into our schedule or find the places? What would you say to someone to get them started?
I know I'm a parent myself, so I know it's very hard to get like a family of five outside into nature. But what I am saying is make it a tradition after dinner. I mean, eat early and the sun sets at 8 o'clock or 8:30. Take a walk as a family. Take a walk around your neighborhood. If you cannot do the afternoon, the kids will love to see the sunrises. Like if you wake your child once in a month to see the sunrise, like that's not going to change anything.
And you've done, as we wrap up, Danielle, you've done big hikes, 20 miles in a day, that kind of thing. But I love the message here that it doesn't have to be this huge production. It can be just that quick walk in the park, right?
Yes. It can be anything little, like go outside and find the parks. There's so many trails out there, but you can walk, start in the neighborhood. When you're done and you feel like I can actually walk 2 miles with my kids, then find local trails and then get your kids out there, let them run around and enjoy nature.
Danny, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Danielle Dowd is a full-time mom and writer who was born in South Africa and now lives in Madison. She's the author of four children's books about hiking and writes about her own hiking adventures around the state at wiadventurefamily.com. We've got a link to her blog and her books at wpr.org/centraltime. Coming up after the news, it's our weekly look at some of the top stories in national politics, including the latest from the ongoing Republican National Convention. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, we'll talk with the head of the state's largest law enforcement group about the shooting of Jacob Blake by Kenosha police and the protests and violence that have followed. First, it's our weekly roundup of some of the top stories in national politics. The shooting of Jacob Blake in Kenosha by police is reverberating around the national political stage, and the Republican National Convention continues to make news with 2 nights to go. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you watched one or both nights of the RNC so far? What do you think? Did you watch the DNC? How do you compare and contrast the two events? If you are one of the rare undecided voters out there, what are you looking for? What are you hearing from the parties? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Lauren Gambino is a senior political reporter for The Guardian based in Washington, where she covers Congress and the Democratic 2020 presidential campaign. Lauren, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
We've been covering the Republican National Convention this week. What are some of the themes you've seen in the first 2 nights?
We've seen, so the first night was a real focus on what an America would look like under a Biden administration. You heard Donald Trump's son, his Donald Trump Jr., his son's girlfriend. They really outlined this very dark vision of a nation overrun with crime, with, in their view, socialism. And so we sort of saw a very ferocious attack, I would say, on the Democrats and on Joe Biden in particular. The second night was more of an emphasis on Donald Trump. You saw a lot of speakers really try to soften his image, perhaps an appeal. There was a clear appeal to women and voters of color who he hasn't done as well with, according to polls. And we also heard from his wife, who offered a very empathetic and heartfelt sympathies to all of the Americans suffering from the coronavirus, those infected, those who lost loved ones. And that was actually the first time that we'd really heard anyone who spoke at the convention really address the sort of reality that many Americans are facing. She directly said, "I know many of you might feel alone right now, but you are not alone. And I understand, we feel sympathy with you."
I want to give a listen to that actually exact moment. We have that here. Here's a listen to First Lady Melania Trump talking about COVID-19 last night.
The invisible enemy, COVID-19, swept across our beautiful country and impacted all of us. My deepest sympathy goes out to everyone who has lost a loved one. And my prayers are with those who are ill or suffering. I know many people are anxious and some feel helpless. I want you to know you're not alone.
But as you said, that was the only significant mention of coronavirus in the couple of nights so far.
Yes, we heard some speakers, sort of offhandedly mention it. Others, actually one of the White House economic advisors referred to it in the past tense as if, this chapter was behind us. So I think, it's a tricky issue for the president because, people are still getting infected. There are the death rate, is while we're, thankfully it's coming down, people are still dying of this. And so he hasn't fully gotten control of the coronavirus. The economy is still, in crisis mode. Millions of people are still unemployed. So it's not a selling point for Donald Trump in these last few weeks before Election Day. At the same time, it is difficult to really ignore something that is so widespread and affects so many Americans.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Jeff is with us in Superior. Jeff, hi.
Hi, thank you. I'm very proud of the Republican National Convention. It's really pro-America. It's making you feel patriotic. It's making you feel like we have a consistent, stable message as a party. And we have a new congressman in northern Wisconsin, a Republican. And, it's hard for Democrats to take responsibility for their own health and for their own lives. So it's not a message they want to hear. They want the government to take care of them. But when it comes to Republican Party, they can certainly find a stable message that is not going to be, killing babies and defending people's freedoms to protest and, impact violence on communities and things like that. We need to have a strong, stable government. And I'm very proud the Republicans are sending that message.
Jeff, thanks a lot for the call. Messages, a lot of them that do appeal to Republicans, not surprisingly, Lauren.
Exactly. We actually heard several speakers talk about abortion and, specifically address Democrats, attack Democrats' position on abortion and remind voters that Donald Trump has taken actions to, he's put justices on the Supreme Court who, even though they don't take positions on Roe v. Wade, are seen as more conservative, more pro-life. So he's taken actions that I think a lot of conservatives really support. And part of the convention strategy was to remind voters, maybe you don't like everything Donald Trump says, but remember what he's done.
Thanks for that call, Jeff, at 800-642-1234. It's our roundup of some of the top stories in national politics. Lauren Gambino is with us from The Guardian, senior political reporter there. You can join in with your thoughts on the party national conventions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Stepping away from the content of the convention this week, Lauren, can you talk about the format and the style? We saw the Democrats tackle it in this online version. We've got mostly virtual for Republicans with a little bit of in-person. What do you make of the presentation so far?
It's definitely been something we've never seen before. Democrats was very much, all online. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris spoke from Wilmington. But aside from that, we saw a lot of pre-taped videos. Republicans have taken a similar approach. They began their convention in North Carolina, where they did do an in-person roll call vote, which was different. Democrats did a videotaped one. But since then, we've seen pre-taped speakers have pre-taped their convention speeches in a building here in Washington, D.C. And then we've seen the president has definitely broken with tradition. And some of his critics will say, is at risk of at least of having his team violate certain ethics laws by hosting part of the convention at the White House, which is federal property. And there is usually the tradition of not using federal property to host a very political event. Though the president himself cannot violate this act, there are questions about the other secretaries. Yesterday we saw acting Secretary of Department of Homeland Security. He was there overseeing a naturalization ceremony at the White House that aired during the convention in primetime. We saw the president use his executive powers to pardon someone during the convention, which is, I don't think we've ever seen that before. And then Melania Trump, she gave her remarks from the White House garden, which, of course, again, ethics experts and Democrats had real concerns with.
Another point of concern there was another speaker, current Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who submitted a pre-recorded endorsement of the president from Jerusalem. Here's a little listen to what he had to say.
The president exited the U.S. from the disastrous nuclear deal with Iran and squeezed the Ayatollah, Hezbollah, and Hamas. The president, too, moved the U.S. embassy to this very city of God, Jerusalem, the rightful capital of the Jewish homeland. And just 2 weeks ago, the president brokered a historic peace deal between Israel and the United Arab Emirates. This is a deal that our grandchildren will read about in their history books.
And a lot of people pointed out secretaries of state typically don't participate in conventions or campaign events. And a memo approved by Pompeo in February of this year reads, quote, Senate confirmed presidential appointees may not even attend a political party convention or convention related event. What has been the back and forth over his appearance at the convention?
So we know Democrats they intend to investigate this because he was on an official visit to Israel when he taped these comments. And, as you just said, it's very atypical for, America's top diplomat to really insert themselves into a political event this way, especially when they're abroad and they're meant to be representing all of the United States. It's sort of an internationally. And then clearly he was participating in a political event to support the president of the United States. So there have been a lot of questions just sort of whether it's about the appropriateness of it. But also Democrats now in the House are moving forward and trying to they're asking for documents, and they said they're going to investigate further.
Let's bring on another caller now at 800-642-1234. Sherry is with us in Whitewater. Sherry, hello.
Hello. Thank you for this program. I'm wondering if I'm the only person that when listening to the speeches, especially the first night, could even relate to the country that these people were describing. It's like a complete alternate reality. The president has beaten the virus and everything is booming. And, that's not the reality on the ground. That's not what people's lives are like. And I'm also very concerned, again, and I'd like your guests' opinion on this, the norms that are being broken, using the White House staff to do election stuff and having all of these staff people doing election speeches and stuff. None of this is okay.
Sherry, thanks a lot for the call. So two points there. First of all, of course, the incumbent party wants to put it in positive spin on what's going on in the nation, Lauren. But is there a risk that there will be a lot of people like our caller who think it shows them as out of touch?
Absolutely. So, obviously it's not, it's not abnormal for the party to host a convention where they depict, themselves and their vision for the nation as pretty rosy. But I think when the nation is going through so many crises, we obviously have a public health crisis and an economic crisis, and there is social unrest. I think to ignore that, risks this dissonance with voters who are impacted by this. And so I think that was why, you know, Republicans and Democrats do believe, will say that Melania Trump's at least addressing the situation on the ground was helpful to that point. But certainly some of these videos that the RNC has released during the convention and a lot of these speakers, the way they talk about the coronavirus is, you know, detached from the reality that we see. And, you know, and the second point, I think it's interesting that the caller raised this because we just heard Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, who was a former member of Congress, you know, he said this morning that he just doesn't think people will care very much about these violations, it's, you know, violation of the Hatch Act, which was meant to sort of draw a line between political activity and official duty. And, you know, he very clearly just thought, you know, the American people, they know that presidents are elected, they know they belong to political parties, so they just won't be bothered by this. So I guess that's a gamble that they're going to make. But clearly, if you have a caller asking about this, maybe that's not true across the board.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Lauren Gambino, senior political reporter for The Guardian. You can join in at 800-642-1234. At the Republican National Convention, the president, many of the other speakers downplaying the still present pandemic. How is their message tracking with you? What do you think of the Republican Party's announcement of no new platform? How do you compare and contrast the Democrats and Republicans, how they've handled their convention in this unusual year? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We continue our talk with Lauren Gambino from The Guardian. With us for our weekly look at some of the top stories in national politics, including this week's Republican National Convention. Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Logan is with us in Green Bay. Logan, hi.
Hi. What I want to comment is about the speech given by, I think, a former Lieutenant Governor of Florida, who's now legal advisor to the president. It was filled with mendacity because she made statements that couldn't be substantiated. For instance, Hunter Biden and Biden himself in the Burisma scandal. And she also made statement that Biden's family had gained unfairly previously. And I don't know where she get these facts. They are not substantiated.
I feel that the
Republicans are desperate.
Logan, thanks for the call. Referring, I think, to Pam Bondi, former Attorney General of Florida. The fact checkers are hustling as these conventions go on, Lauren.
Yes, we really appreciate the work they're doing. She gave a speech. You know, actually, I was surprised that she was sort of the first person to really raise, you know, these accusations that Republicans have been making for a long time, many of them false, many of them unsubstantiated, as the caller mentioned. But, you know, if you go back, it seems like so long ago now, but this is why Donald Trump was impeached in the first place. He wanted to, he put pressure on Ukraine, to look into the links between Hunter Biden and this Ukrainian gas company, and was hoping to harm his potential rival then, now his opponent, but then he didn't know it would be Joe Biden. So, you know, that was a line of attack that we've kind of seen some Republicans and some in the Trump campaign drop recently, but Pam Bondi brought it back last night. You know, again, many of the exact claims, the wider idea of nepotism was maybe perhaps undercut by the fact that, you know, Donald Trump has many children working for him. Many of the keynote speakers at this convention are family members. And, you know, obviously some of the facts were false. But I guess we'll see whether the Trump campaign believes that they are going to ramp up those attacks again. But as I've seen, those have kind of fallen from a priority in terms of the attacks that they are leveraging against Joe Biden.
Thanks for the call, Logan. We'll go to Scott now in Merrill. Scott, hi.
Hi.
What'd you want to bring up, Scott?
I just was saying, I watched both conventions so far, every single night of each one. And from what I'm seeing and my wife's seeing, we're seeing more of the reality of from the Democrats. And the Republicans are seeming like they're lying about everything and making that there's nothing.
You're breaking up there, Scott, but I think we got the gist, Lauren. He thinks the Democrats are portraying America more accurately right now, it sounds like.
Democrats think their best line of attack against Donald Trump is to just keep emphasizing his handling of the coronavirus, that he has missteps, at every step of the way he's made the wrong decision or not done something that could have, perhaps led us to a place where maybe all children could be going back to school, or there would be more widespread testing, or, whatever could be happening right now if Donald Trump had acted differently. That is what they think is their strongest line of defense. We're going to hear from Kamala Harris, the running mate, tomorrow, really, according to the campaign, make a forceful case to that point. So it is no surprise that Democrats emphasized that and talked a lot about the reality of the coronavirus during their convention. But as we've talked about earlier, it is a difficult subject for the president because he is the one in charge right now. He is leading the nation. And as of right now, compared to other countries around the world, we are behind. We lead the nation lead the world in deaths and infections. And so, to say it's a job well done, that's a really hard case to make.
Thanks for that call. It's our weekly look at some of the latest stories in national politics. Lauren Gambino is with us from The Guardian. I want to move on to another topic before we run out of time, Lauren. Of course, this national story from here in Wisconsin in Kenosha, the police shooting of Jacob Blake. What kind of response are you seeing on the national political stage?
So nationally, obviously, we're getting a range of responses from across the political spectrum, but I'll start with the obvious ones. Yesterday, the Republican National Convention opened with a prayer, and they did pray for Jacob Blake and his family. But then, we also saw Trump really lean into this law and order messaging on Twitter today. He's emphasized law and order and really, come out strong against the violence and the looting. And that's been a part of his message for months now. So I think you'll definitely see him continue to use these images of, of burning buildings and violence as part of his campaign to convince people that, you need someone who's very strong on law and order. I would say the risk there is that he's trying to convince people that this is what Biden's America would look like. Obviously, though, that's happening under his administration. Alternatively, we just heard from Joe Biden. He put out a little video just before we spoke, and he said he's spoken to the Blake family, and he's calling for justice for the family. But he's also actually, and clearly you can tell that the campaign doesn't want to be tagged as being soft on crime, if you will, because in this video statement he put out, he was very forcefully said, there should not be violence. You're not doing this in his name. This doesn't help. And so that's clearly an attempt to push back on these attacks from Republicans and Trump that he wants to defund the police, which is not the case, and that he supports sort of the more violent elements of these protests, which, have often been peaceful, but they can, especially as we're seeing in Wisconsin now, they can be violent.
In our last minute or so, Lauren, conventions will be over by the end of the week. What are you watching for in the post-convention political landscape?
It's so strange because everything's different. So, we'll watch for that famous, post-convention bump. But I think just there's two very stark visions of America. And so I guess I'm really looking to see, was he able to expand his base? Was he able to reach out and to anyone new, bring anyone in over the course of his 4 days? And alternatively, the Democrats, they tried really hard to show that they have this big, broad coalition that stretches from Bernie Sanders to Republican governors. And so can they keep that coalition? Can they turn out that coalition in numbers enough to win? And I think those are the two big questions that will determine who wins in November.
Lauren, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Lauren Gambino, Lauren Gambino, senior political reporter for The Guardian, where she covers Congress and the 2020 Democratic presidential campaign. We talked to her today about some of the week's top national political news stories, mainly the Republican National Convention and how that's playing out. That continues tonight and tomorrow night. You can still let us know what you think, the contrast between the two conventions, what messages are reaching you, what do you think they're getting wrong, either party in their big public event, mostly virtual. Email us with your thoughts at ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. We are in the dog days of summer, according to some definitions. But more important, today is actually the dog day, National Dog Day. National Dog Day was started as a general celebration of dogs and as a way to encourage people to consider adopting a dog from a shelter or an animal rescue operation. For most dog owners, I'll imagine you'll celebrate National Dog Day the same you would any other day by spending some time with your dog. Here's a little bonus information for the special occasion. The pet health insurance company Trupanion has released its top 10 list of the most popular dog names of the year, at least among their customers. Let's do it in reverse order, 10 to 1. Number 10, Coco. Number 9, Max. 8, Milo. 7 is Lucy. 6 is Daisy. 5 is Cooper. 4 is Bailey. And then the top three most popular dog names, according to at least this one dog health insurance company. Number 3, Bella. We've got a Bella next door, actually. 2, Charlie. And number 1, and I think this is a repeat from last year, I should have checked. Number 1 is Luna. By the way, our friends at NPR on their Twitter feed are looking for your pictures of dogs and sharing some of their own. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.